of hope in these big organizations like the UN and the ICJ and all of those. Where did they come from? They came from a World War II, which is, you know, everything had been lost, the way it had been conducted. They understood that that's not how we wanted things to see things continue. This is going to yet bring another layer of, we never want to see this happen, so hopefully it's going to wake people up. But if we numb ourselves, and if we don't have the emotions, and if we don't look at what's happening, and if we don't bear witness, we're basically not going to equip people in the future to make the changes that are necessary. The youth are going to be so disconnected from what's happening. So I think it's important and very necessary to feel the pain. And we're not even feeling the fraction. We're just watching. That's all we're doing. If we start to understand what they are going through, it's unfathomable what's going to take for them to come out. I'm sure we will survive it.
A small price to pay, but one we must pay nonetheless, Uzma. Well, just a reminder here that this is Gaza under attack. We take a deep dive into some of the talking points surrounding the ongoing U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, the blockaded coastal enclave. Now, the head of the Palestine mission to the UK, Dr. Hussam Zomlot, told the press in London this week that the state of Palestine has put forward a comprehensive plan for a ceasefire and the way forward, but this cannot be achieved if Israel doesn't allow an enabling environment.
This government is offered by the state of Palestine by way of uniting our people and our geography and providing for our immense, unprecedented needs. But that government will not be able to do so without creating an enabling environment for that government. That government cannot be formed or functioning if a person like Smotrich, who happened to be the finance minister of Israel, keeps deciding, should we be receiving our own money or not? Our money, our taxes. That government cannot function should we still have all the crippling checkpoints and walls that has torn apart our economy and shrinked our economic base. That government cannot function if we still have no control over our resources, natural resources, land and what have you. That government will not be able to function if we do not have control of our borders. So we create our own and conduct our own international trade agreements like any other government. Of course, the government will have to levy, will have to create its own revenue base. And those are the revenue bases. International help will go in the form of programs that will help in the reconstruction, what have you. But our budget has to come from our revenues. So it is crucial, it is absolutely crucial that we make sure that the new government is enabled. And this is the discussion, this is the conversation we are having with our regional and international partners. And we are presenting all these partners with clear plan and way forward of how a new government can function and can deliver.
Voting has kicked off in the Rochdale by-election in England. It's the first major test of voters' intentions since the start of the US-Israeli genocide on the people of Gaza. Pro-Palestine candidate George Galloway is tipped to win by the bookmakers. But ahead of the count, we spoke with him and asked what would be his first task if elected.
The first thing I'm going to do is, on Wednesday, Prime Minister's questions, I'm going to tell the Prime Minister that I have arrived with a fresh mandate, the only member of the House to do so, with a fresh mandate to stop the slaughter in Gaza. A ceasefire is necessary, but not sufficient. A temporary pause, a humanitarian pause, a simple ceasefire is not enough. We need an end to the occupation. We need the total withdrawal of the siege of Gaza. And we need recognition of the Palestinian right to self-determination, enshrined in international law, enshrined in Security Council resolutions, enshrined in the Oslo Agreement, all ignored. And the Oslo Agreement is now dead and buried. It's been ignored for so long. 700,000 illegal settlers are now living on the parts of Palestine that were supposed to be the Palestinian state. So 30 years since the Oslo Agreement, it's time to raise the flag of one state, call it the Holy Land, in which Jews, Muslims and Christians live as equal citizens before the law. These are the kind of arguments I'll be making in Parliament.
George Galloway there. So we have a few more minutes to go. Let's continue the conversation with my guests, Charles Kelly and Uzba Naqvi. And Charles there, we saw the this by-election in Rochdale. It's a real litmus test to see how politicians, how voters, how prospective voters are responding to the issue of Palestine and Gaza and the way politicians have dealt with this. How do you see this playing out?
It was very interesting how it's worked out for George. I mean, George is a wily old experienced campaigner. He's been an MP before. He was a Labour MP in Scotland. So he knows what he's doing. But this is almost like this is falling in his lap because of Labour's withdrawal of support for their candidate, although it still appears as a Labour candidate on the ballot. So maybe some people will just vote Labour. But he's...
Isn't that problematic, though? The fact that for a man who's been essentially disavowed by his own party, he's still on the ballot because it was too late to take him off, but almost by some kind of conditioning, people will still tick the box because that's how politics sometimes works here.
Yeah, I guess people go into the box and just, oh, tick Labour. I usually vote Labour. So it's very close. George is the favourite, but only by a narrow margin. But it could cause a big upset if he wins. Whether he'll stay in power for very long, if there's a general election towards the end of the year, he could have a very short term.
Why do you say that?
Well, because Labour could come back and win in the general election. In by-elections, sitting parties can often lose a by-election more or less as a protest vote. But in the general election, where there's a higher turnout, more people are out on the streets in the general election, usually the seat can go back to the previous party. It could happen. I'm not saying it would happen, but George will certainly shake things up if he gets into Parliament. I'm sure he'll have a few words to say to the government.
I can almost see Richie Sunak and Sir Keir Starmer going, oh, no, not him. We thought we'd escaped him.
Yeah, now, they got rid of him now and he's back. He's like, he won't go away.
Uzma, you know, we've talked here about politicians with a pro-Palestine agenda doing quite well so far in some of this. But what do you make of the people power that's brought them to where they are right now? Because we've been out on our streets in the tens of thousands here, in the millions, some would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's our only hope. It's the only reason that I feel any optimism that I do. Rochdale, especially what you're just discussing right now, has a very large Asian community, Muslim community, who are hugely disappointed in the way that, you know, things have turned out with Labour. And I think that it's a refreshing change. It's George Galloway is one of my favorite people. I can listen to him for hours. He's somebody who's unapologetic about his views, and this is something that's happening right now, and it needs to be dealt with right now. So we need somebody who has the strength to be able to relay a message. And I was smiling just there when you came to me because you're absolutely right. Because both the government right now and the opposition are going to be hitting their foreheads when they see George Galloway appear, because he's somebody who has a lot of strength in what he says. He goes with his numbers. He has his facts and figures. He's a very strong person, and I think it's important to have people like that, to, you know, who can be our voice and who can speak what we want to say, because we don't have access to the powers that be. I myself have been a supporter of Labour for a very, very long time, and I can't remember ever voting any other party. But I, you know, it will never happen again. I mean, that's how much people feel such a disappointment that they have completely failed us on the views that we hold as constituents. So I think it's really important to have more voices like this. But I'm certainly very happy that things are evolving in the way that they are. It's very disappointing also to see Keir Starmer and the way that he has dealt with this whole thing and the whole suspensions and everything else. And the very reason that they took Jeremy Corbyn out is also the very reason that his own members within his own party, it's just created such a big mess. And I do think that this will change, bring up a refreshing change, inshallah. I do see it being better.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Charles Kelly and Uzba Naqvi. Great words to leave it there. And thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. And for you, until we meet again, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, we have reached the sixth verse of chapter Naml. Let's listen to the sixth verse of this chapter.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَإِنَّكَ لَتُلَقَّى الْقُرْآنَ مِنْ لَدُنْ حَكِيمٍ عَلِيمٍ.
And indeed, O Muhammad, you receive the Quran from one wise and knowing.
What we need to know prior to the discussion of the verse is that the knowledge of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is a divine and intuitive knowledge. The receiver of the divine revelation is the messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the Quran is the sign of the knowledge and wisdom of Allah. Wa innaka latulaqqa al-Quran min ladun hakimin alim. Most surely you receive the Quran from all wise, all knowing. So in this verse under discussion, As a complementary to the former explanations about the greatness of the contents of the Holy Quran, and also a preparation for the stories of the prophets, which immediately begins after it, it says, and most surely you receive the Quran from the one all-wise, all-knowing. We need to remind you that in the beginning of this chapter, Ta-Sin, Tilka ayatul Quran was mentioned, and we said that we do not really know the true interpretation of these abbreviated letters in the beginning of some of the chapters of the Holy Quran. But since these abbreviated letters in this chapter are right next to the qualities of the Quran, an explanation of the Holy Quran follows, this could be completely related and correlated with that. Anyway, the point is that the Quran says in this verse, إِنَّكَ لَتُلَقَّ الْقُرْآنَ مِنْ لَدُنْ حَكِيمٍ عَلِيمٍ. The Quranic word حَكِيمٍ and alim both refer to the awareness of Allah, but the word hikmah and wisdom usually states the practical aspects, while ilm, knowledge, points to some theoretical aspects. In other words, the Quranic word alim is referring to the infinite knowledge of Allah, and the application of the word hakim informs of the view of that order and the aim of creation of this world, as well as sending down the Quran. Such Quran, which has been sent down from the side of such Lord, should be a manifest book. Kitabin Mubin, not just manifest itself, but also has the quality of making things manifest, making things clear. This Quran works as a guidance and glad tidings for the believers, and its stories should be free from any superstition and distortion.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, the important true problem in man's life is that he must comprehend the facts as they really are and have an explicit proper position before them. Imagination, predictions, wrong desires and false likes and dislikes must not hinder man to see and understand the realities in their true form. So, the most important definition, which has been introduced for philosophy, is perceiving the facts of things as they really are. So, this sentence has a presupposition. It presupposes that there is a reality that can be understood. That was why, and that one of the most important things that the Immaculate Ones used to ask from the Almighty Allah, when they said, "O Allah, show us the things as they are. O Allah, show me the facts of the things as they are, so that I can recognize the values of different things and treat them rightly." This circumstance is not possible without having faith, because low desires and egocentric wishes are the greatest barriers of this way, and removing the hinders is not possible save with the piety in controlling those sensual desires. Thank you for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu, ya Qayyum, nawwir qalbana.
You're listening to the program The Key with Sheikh Rouhani on RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Dear and respected brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. We are talking about the occultation of the 12th Imam. We are trying to present some of the responses given by the Ahl al-Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam to the questions regarding the ghaiba of the Imam, of the 12th Imam. We mentioned some of them in the previous episodes. In this episode, I want to narrate and also actually recite for you a very beautiful hadith, which is a kind of response to these sort of questions presented by Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. Muhammad ibn Muslim narrate from Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salatu wassalam. Muhammad ibn Muslim said that I went to Imam al-Baqir in order to ask him about the Qa'im from the progeny of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Before I would be able to utter a word, the Imam said, five similarities with five prophets can be found in the Qa'im from the progeny of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. First, similarity with Yunus. And that is his return to his people after being absent from them. Similarity with Yusuf, which is his absence from his people and relatives, and the difficulty brought by actually the absence to his father Yaqub. You know that Prophet Yusuf was absent from his nation, his people, his relatives, his father. And you know this story. And then similarity with Musa. The third one is similarity with Musa alayhi salam on the secret nature of his birth and the absence from his followers and votaries, as well as the trouble created by his enemies until his return and actually triumph over the hosts of Pharaoh by God's leave. The fourth one is similarity with Isa alayhi salatu wassalam, in that there are a difference of opinions on his being alive, and some say he is alive while others think that he is dead. So, and the fifth one is similarity with his great grandfather, the noble messenger, as he will rise up with this word and actually eliminate the enemies of God and his messenger. In this very beautiful hadith that actually Muhammad ibn Muslim narrates from Imam al-Baqir, you see that how beautifully, how meaningfully Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam answers this question. Similarly, regarding the occultation of the Prophet Saleh alayhi salam, Imam al-Sadiq also reported and saying that he was absent for some times, and when he returned, his face was totally changed, and the people were divided into three about him. One group affirmed him, another group denied him and rejected him, and a third group was in doubt and skepticism, because Prophet Saleh alayhi salatu wasalam's appearance changed completely, and that is why the people were of different views regarding Prophet Saleh alayhi salatu wasalam. It is something that may happen even to the 12th Imam when he reappears. Some of the people might accept, some of the people might reject, some of the people might be in a doubtful status. This is what will happen for the reappearance of Imam al-Asr wa Hunafida as well. That is why, since these sort of things happened to the previous prophets, salawatullahi alayhim ajma'in, that's why it's not something very is strange, because sometimes some people are not familiar with these kind of points. They might get shocked, but it's not that strange. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Rouhani in the program The Key on RIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Aperture.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit, but behind this resounding success lies a dark secret: toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
Up in there, keep an eye, get out of the head.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. A prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-block, this is where all the medical testing, the human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on, like, two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time, because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would print the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, their new toxic products reach the market. These multinationals all have one thing in common: a culture of secrecy.
They're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. in the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry.
Everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, it was secure.
Are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action. Lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world if they would have informed us back then that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't have made it up.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day. Okay. So
all day long, people were coming in?
Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This material is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland, the birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin, levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, the company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow is acting in its own interests, so Dow is trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life here, near the river. This is where she raised her family.
We used to have all trails that went down through here. The land is very fertile, and it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just, you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore and they could build forts and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
Nope. We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Buchelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Buchelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007, when tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency. The levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
My oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have 5 kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. some to a lesser degree and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Buchelter, was a doctor, A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. The results of my husband's, this is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Buchelder's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, three times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died. And would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards like Alice Buchelder's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Shuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there is no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They are dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Schwan shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. Up to 3 kilometers from the factory, 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells. Like in Shakya's family home, they've lived in this house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar, a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011, but for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Taqwa is not Quranic taqwa. Me abandoning my social and political responsibilities in the name of purity and holiness and staying away from sin. It's not the case that the believer who has taqwa, this is just a relationship between me and God, and I'm allowed to abandon my social and political responsibilities because of fear of, if I get involved in the dunya, I might commit sins, I might make mistakes. The dunya is najis, let me just stay away from it, let me run off. Right? Actually, this kind of taqwa, and I want to share the verse of this, is going to be one where you get your hands dirty. You get involved. You stop what's going on. You save those who are drowning in sin. Right? But first, the Quranic principle. Surah 57 and verse number 27. All right. So now, again, let's remember the concept. The idea that were there a group of people who believed in this way, that in order for me to get taqwa, Quranic taqwa, be close to God, what I need to do is stay away from the dunya. I don't do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar. I don't do my social and political responsibilities. I withdraw, and this way I save myself. Yes, there were. What does the Quran say about those monks? Those people would run off in the hills. This now, let's see if you can find it. So it's part of the verse, Warahbaniya, right? So Manassas, being a monk, being a monk, right? What does God say about this withdrawing, running away? I don't do my social and political responsibilities. I save myself. What does God say about it? Let's look at the verse. Ibtada'uha. How many of us have heard of the word bid'at? Bid'ah. Innovation, right? Bid'ah is something you invent, something that wasn't part of the deen, right? It's not part of Allah's religion. I make a bid'ah and I put it in the deen. So what does God say about being a monk, running away, escaping? He says, وَرَحْبَانِيَّ ibtada'uha. They made, that was a bid'ah that they placed there. They invented it. مَا كَتَبْنَاهَا عَلَيْهِمْ. We did not write that for them. We didn't ordain that. That wasn't part of Islam, right? In Islam, no. You have to do your social and political responsibilities. Being a Muslim, being a mu'min, means I'm committed. I've got to go and I've got to rescue others. I can't say, well, it's dangerous. No, no. Taqwa is body armor. Okay? So, example. I want to give two examples. One time, there's an active shooter situation. Right? An active shooter situation. If there's an active shooter situation, most people would run for their lives. Right? I don't want to get hurt. Right? This is now for us to understand the taqwa. What about the person who had military training, who donned the body armor, who goes in to rescue the kids to stop the oppressor? Another situation, an area where there's a plague, there's this infectious disease, everybody's catching it, people are dropping like flies. The person, so some people would, let's escape, let's run away, let's go live in the hills. There's another group of people who don the hazmat suit, who learn whatever protective measures they need to, and go in to rescue people. So the person who has taqwa, based on the ayat of the Quran, is the person who arms themselves with taqwa. We'll have to discuss what that is. And then with this armor of taqwa, goes into society, interacts, saves people, stops oppression, isn't abandoning the dunya, abandoning their social responsibilities. They don't think that this is just a personal relationship with me and God, and the dunya is not just anyway. I want to give you one more story. This is from one of our shuhada, Shaheed Ibrahim Hadi. Ibrahim Hadi. May Allah raise him with Ahlul Bayt. So this story is about the beginning of the revolution. Beginning of the revolution. So Shaheed Ibrahim Hadi was working as part of internal affairs for in the sports department. And a report came in. They're trying to change the society. A report comes in that one of the people who's in charge of these big gyms, right, former champion in his own sport, this man, unfortunately, he himself is not only corrupt, but corrupting. So his wife, not observing things, he himself, the jokes that he's making with women, the foul language that he's using, and the report came in, they said, you know, we've got to change this guy. This guy can't be the head of the gym. The guy who's telling the story says that I was writing a report to have this man removed. And Ibrahim came in. When Ibrahim came in, he said, what's happening? He said, well, there's this such and such guy. He's over there at the gym. And he's not doing his responsibility. He's faucet. We have to remove him. Ibrahim said, have you spoken to the person? He said, no, I didn't. But his employees say, everybody knows. This is very clear. Everybody knows who he is. Ibrahim said, we got to talk to the guy. The taqwa, a person of taqwa doesn't just, I just distance myself, they're all najis, get rid of them. No, no, let me talk to the guy. He said, let's go and see him. He said, we ended up going on a motorcycle. We drive over to the guy's residence. So these two young Basijis, we're going to drive over to this guy's residence. We pull up at the guy's residence, and Ibrahim jumps off the motorcycle, knock on the door. They said the guy's wife walked in, and almost like no hijab, it was like, you know, these guys are gone. So when Ibrahim comes, he introduces himself. Who are you, young man standing at the door? I'm Ibrahim Hadi. And the guy recognizes. He says, oh, you're from internal affairs? He said, yeah. He said, I'd like to talk to you for a minute, Ibrahim. I'd like to talk to you for a minute. The guy said, come inside. He said, no, look, it'll take a few minutes. I just want to talk to you about it. The other guy's listening, telling the story. So Ibrahim sat the guy down, spoke to the guy. What are we doing? Is it correct that we do this? What's the effect that's happening on the youth when your wife is walking like this, the jokes that you're making, that language, you're in charge, you're a champion in your own department. He interacted with him. He spoke with him. He changed this man. Then by the time he was finished, he said that this was the letter I was supposed to give for your dismissal, and Ibrahim tore it up. He said, I want you to think about these words that I shared, and he left. The guy says, a few months later, a report came back in. This guy is a changed man now. One conversation, one of the mu'min, instead of running away, they're all najis, they're bad. One of the situations where the mu'min goes over and talks and engages and shares and explains. And what happened? The report came in later, how the man had changed. So that was one part about this Quranic taqwa. Now, another Quranic story that I want to give you, brothers and sisters, is about those people who, because we have to define what taqwa is. And who is it who is not affected by Quran, can't be guided by Quran, to again know what that Quranic taqwa is. So Quranic taqwa, first let's define it. Quranic taqwa, this is going to be the big difference between Quranic taqwa and that false taqwa. Quranic taqwa will be that I am a vigilant person. I'm aware of my surroundings. I'm aware of the dangers. I'm aware of the challenges. I'm laser focused. And now, with my Quranic taqwa, I proceed and I act and I do not that because I'm aware of the dangers, I stay in my house and I don't face challenges. So one person is doing haraka, is moving, is advancing, is changing. Another person says, there's danger out there, there's sins, there's ma'asi, there's ghiba. I'll stay in the house, not do anything, and inshallah, that's taqwa. Okay? Two examples. One person is walking in a desert. And in this desert, because I have moccasins on, leather shoes. Leather shoes. And I'm walking in this desert. And in this desert, there are areas where there are thorns. Right? They'll go right through my moccasins. So when I'm walking, the person who has taqwa, I'm laser focused, I'm aware that there's danger, and I'm walking and I'm going through the desert, but I'm a little bit careful. Right? I don't just kind of heedlessly close my eyes and no, I'm careful, but I'm moving, I'm doing, I'm changing, I'm fixing, and I'm just careful, I'm vigilant, I'm aware of my surroundings.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.